Captain Robert Falcon Scott wanted to overwinter in the Antarctica for the first time, so the strongest ship of its time, the Discovery, was built in Dundee, Scotland. How did the discoveries of Captain Scott and the Discovery exemplify the value of water? Today's segment is part of the series titled, Water is a Many Splendored Thing. Hello, I'm Steve Baker. This is Living Water. Living in Dundee, Scotland, you are very aware of the Discovery Expedition story and the appeal of Captain Scott. I met Brian Kelly at the Dundee Heritage Trust, where he is very much involved in sharing the history and adventures of the RRS Discovery. As he shared the story of Captain Scott and the Discovery's missions, my imagination ran wild as I could see the Discovery no more than 100 feet from where I was sitting. Captain Scott and this ship had quite an appeal.
Captain Scott was a very interesting sort of character. He was very much committed to the work that he was doing. When he'd started off in the Navy as a teenager, so he had a lot of experience out at sea. But he had also had a scientific background as well, so he was an ideal person to be in charge of the expedition. So he was in overall charge of the ship and of all the scientific work that was going on as well. He was, however, quite a reserved sort of person as well, and I think he tended to run the ship quite strictly, very much along the lines you would expect for a Royal Naval officer. But Scott himself, I think, was very committed, and certainly the crew members who got on well with him were very, very loyal to him.
The mission of the first expedition of the Discovery was strictly scientific and was truly a journey into the unknown.
This expedition was the first time scientists were going down to the Antarctic, so the research really was looking at what do we want to know. So at that time, the Antarctic was really the last unexplored frontier in the world, very much equivalent, for example, to the Apollo missions of the 60s going to the moon. This was really much a journey into the unknown for the explorers. So they wanted to investigate everything, so they had a whole variety of scientists on board. They had biologists and zoologists to study the wildlife. They had physicists and meteorologists to study the weather and magnetic fields and so on around the Antarctic. And then, of course, they had geologists who were studying the rocks that they found. So basically, they were covering just about everything. And when they returned after their 2 years in the Antarctic on that first expedition, there was 10 volumes of scientific work published on all their discoveries. So it really was a big step at that point, mapping the coastline and so on. It was a huge amount of information to come back.
The Discovery was special. Its wooden construction brought specific benefits to the cold environment of the Antarctica. The shipbuilder used over 20 different kinds of wood from around the world in the assembly of the Discovery. The mission was to build a ship that would be resilient in the coldest of environments. The ship's hull was solid, with no portals on the sides. Everything was built for strength and longevity. Carpenters and other workers dedicated to maintaining the ship were added to the crew of the Discovery.
Discovery was specially designed, obviously, as an Antarctic research ship. A lot of the other ships that were used at that time were often second-hand whaling ships, but Discovery was specially built. So we do have all these features that were really excellent for travelling through the ice. So, for example, the angle of the bow was quite steeply raked. So what would happen is that as the ship was going through the ice, it would raise up over the ice ahead, and then the weight of the ship would pull the bow down, so it would actually break. So it was a kind of sawing motion as it was going through the ice. And as well as the strength of the wood, we have steel plates on the bow too. So this made the ship very strong for cutting through the ice, specially designed overhanging stern as well, which protected the rudder and the propeller at the rear of the ship too. So an excellent ship for working in the Antarctic.
On the second adventure to the Antarctica, non-scientific interests became a new part of the Discovery's mission. Whale ecology for safeguarding the migration of whales and laying claims for land in the Antarctica became new focuses for the Discovery.
The later expeditions in the 20s and 30s really built on that to a certain extent. In the oceanographic expedition in the sort of mid-1920s was to research into whale populations. By that stage, whaling had become incredibly successful to the extent that they were wiping out large numbers of the whales around the world. So the expedition was to try to understand a bit more about the whale life cycle, migration, breeding cycles. Not so much to preserve the whales for their own sake, to preserve the whales, to keep the whaling industry going for longer, but it was still an important step to take. And it was probably the first time that what we'd call today ecology of the whales had been studied in that amount of detail. So that was a very significant expedition, and it brought that and its successors probably led to the whaling ban later on. By the 1930s, we were looking at a further attempt, not just to map coastline and do scientific work, but also to try to claim land in the Antarctic. So the final expedition was a British, Australian and New Zealand Antarctic research expedition under the command of an Australian explorer, Sir Douglas Mawson. And what they were doing there was also claiming the land for the what was at that time the British Commonwealth. So they were planting the flag in as many places as possible. They even had a gypsy moth aircraft on board the ship, which they would lower into the water and it would take off and they would fly over the land, dropping Union Jacks onto different parts of the Antarctic and saying, well, that's ours now because the flag lies there. So very different sorts of expeditions, but still expanding our knowledge. And although Discovery herself didn't return to the Antarctic after the 1930s, a series of expeditions called the Discovery Investigations continued right up until the 1950s, building on the work that had been done on those early expeditions.
As the needs of exploratory and scientific trips to the Antarctica evolved, the Discovery was considered an old-fashioned ship. It was eventually retired in London and became a training ship for the Sea Scots and Royal Navy.
Despite the value of having a wooden ship for exploration purposes in the Antarctic, there were downsides to Discovery by the time you came to the 1930s. Metal ships were beginning to become strong enough to go down to these sorts of regions. The laboratory space you would require on board the ship was more modern materials. With Discovery having sort of coal-fired steam engine, you couldn't go terribly far because you had to make sure you didn't run out of your coal supply. So really, Discovery was getting a little bit old at that stage. So the investigations were taken on by more modern ships. So she then was retired to the River Thames in London and became a training ship for the Sea Scouts and the Royal Navy, which continued her life. And I think because of that, we still have the ship today as a museum because she was used continuously.
According to Brian, Captain Scott's adventures on the Discovery demonstrated the great value of water. From a means of transportation that connects nations to the support of life in so many forms and conditions that exist in the northern latitudes of Scotland, all the way down to the southern reaches of our planet's South Pole. Fundamental to our lives and environment, I'm Steve Baker. This is Living Water.